We are back at it.
My responsibility is to make this place great again.
Champions of the Big 12.
This is not the 1980s OSU.
Remember, always have faith in God, but have faith in yourself, and certainly have faith in the Cowboys.
We are back at it officially. Welcome back to the Pistols Firing Podcast. I'm Carson Cunningham, joined as always by Colby Powell. Colby, how are we doing today? It's good to be back. Just watched Manchester United whoop up on Ipswich, basically the Tulsa of the EPL. had to lay the smack down, and I'm feeling better and good to be back with you, sir. And enjoyed the Megapod, but it's good to have the OGs back in the saddle here.
Yeah, we missed you the other night. Glad you're back. Feeling better. It's not football season yet. We have to wait 6 more days for football season. But footy season is well underway. Football. The red and white, I got to tell you, the red and white's a tough look on the Pistols Firing Pod. But I understand. It was a big bounce back win for United after dropping the opener to newly promoted Hull City, who, if I'm not mistaken, now sits at the top of the table.
Yeah.
Tough scenes opening week.
Yeah, it reminded me of all those years that Mike Gundy lost the Big 12 season opener. You know, you like non-conference, played a bunch of cupcakes. Here we go. It's Big 12 season, and then lose at home to like TCU. That's very much what it felt like. You know, there was a lot of dark horse potential amongst Manchester United supporters. You know, they finished top three last year. They improved the team, and then it felt like your season's over after one game. That was not ideal, but I had my original like old school brand t-shirt, and I'm like, you know what, I can wear that all season. I can't wear this every day for the first win of Manchester United season. So do apologize for the red. It does clash with our banner down at the bottom with the orange, and does spring memories of the team down south. But I will not apologize for celebrating a victory, and I will apologize for missing last week. Again, you guys did a great job on the Megapod. This show, as always, is sponsored by Chris's University Spirit, your one-stop cowboy shop. Be sure to shop at ChrisUniversitySpirit.com. Free shipping, free standard shipping on all orders over $75, as you know. Check them out online. And also, I believe Eric Morris, he bought a camouflage Cowboys hat. Somebody sent this to me on the chamber. I think I have a picture of it here if you want to come back to me, Colby. Yeah, OSU Wildman on the chamber sent me this. He says, Emo's hat was purchased at Chris's University Spirit, a proud sponsor of Carson Cunningham and Colby Powell's podcast. Hopefully that is right, Colby. I think he is right, but we got the camo hat.
Okay.
1890 OSU hat. You know, camo, not really my style, but it serves a big demographic of, you know, we are an ag school. A lot of rural students, a lot of rural alumni. Eric Morris is out in his front yard shooting armadillos, probably wearing that camo hat he got from Chris's University Spirit. You know where to go. Go there before every game this year, and they'll hook you up with the latest, greatest gear that Eric Morris himself is now sporting.
You took a joke. I was going to say, that's how you sneak up on armadillos. You go to Chris's, you get you a camo hat, and you sneak up on an armadillo. An armadillo tore up my mom's front yard pretty good the other day. She was hot in the family group chat about an armadillo. There were some words in the family group chat. I'm glad my daughter can't read yet. She's 4, let's say that. I'm glad she can't read some of the words my mom typed about the armadillo.
Now, does your mom live out in rural America?
No. My parents live in Northwest Oklahoma City, but they live in a neighborhood. There's kind of like this pond out in the middle and trees. So they do get a decent bit of wildlife just trying to come to the water. It's like there's snakes and frogs, and they actually have an otter, like a freshwater otter that lives in the neighborhood, which is weird. They've got a bobcat that lives in the neighborhood. They've got coyotes, ducks, geese, the works. So yeah, and every so often, a couple of years ago, she got an armadillo and it about drove her insane, and now she's got another one. So it's just what the world needs, is my mom having the crazy scale tipped a little bit more by an armadillo.
You know, I expect an armadillo to be in Eric Morris's front yard out there in Payne County. I did not expect Northwest Oklahoma City to have armadillos. That's a new one for me. And I'm a lifelong Oklahoman, but hopefully I don't need to be on armadillo watch. I got a bunch of rabbits in my backyard. I had to build like a little like chicken wire fence to dig down the ground. So I'm not quite Gundy Ranch over here, but I'm Rabbit Ranch as we sit here today. Okay. So you and the Megapod guys did a great job breaking down the season. Got me really fired up for the season as well. And I wanted to kind of run through my predictions since I was not able to do that. I believe you guys went through every game, gave a lot of, you know, accolades for, you know, top offensive player, defensive player, interception, sacks, all those things. So we can get through it rather quickly. I do have a thesis behind most of my predictions, which I'll get to as we kind of work our way through the schedule.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. We were very much an echo contracting echo chamber for a while the other night. And then finally, once we got to Halloween, November, maybe, we started deviating a little bit. You start getting some road games on the schedule. Texas Tech pops up on the schedule. And yeah, it was we were lockstep for like the first 7 weeks. So we'll see if you keep it rolling for us.
Yeah, and let's just go ahead and get started then. Tulsa, you know, look, I really liked what you had to say. Like, look, Trey Lamb shot his shot, ran his mouth, won the game. That's what you should do if you come to Stillwater and beat Oklahoma State if you're Tulsa. I have no ill will towards that. But it's time for Big Brother to stroll up to the 918, whip out the cowboy belt with the giant buckle on it, wrap a few strands around the hand, and layeth the smacketh down with brutal intentions. And that's what I think is going to happen. I think Eric Morris is going to run the score up, and I think they're going to win 52-14. I don't think Tulsa's going to have much for the defense either. I think it's a blowout. It's practically a home game. I've covered multiple games up there in Tulsa at Chapman Stadium. Nice little stadium for Jinx or Union maybe, but not for a college team. And it's going to have a lot of orange in it. So I fully expect a blowout in week one for Eric Morris. And I think he wants to make a point as well, as far as recruiting goes as well, because that's important to him. He recruits the hell out of Tulsa, as he should.
Yeah, just got a big flip the other day from top of my head, Jinx offensive lineman. Aruru took him from Arkansas. Big time recruit. So, yeah, I think he wants to make a statement too. I've got a 52-20. So, yeah, we're completely in agreement. I don't know. I think Tulsa had all of their fun last year, every last bit of it. And by the way, thank you, Tulsa. You allowed us to rip off the Band-Aid and move on, and we got to be out in front of everybody nationally with our search. And now we've got head coach Eric Morris, who we are all very happy with.
Yep, absolutely. You don't hear much about Chad Weiberg these days anymore, do you, Colby? You know?
Not
too
much.
He hires David Taylor. He hires Steve Lutz, which he's a little bit out there, but I do feel like Eric Morris is going to be a very much a David Taylor renaissance like hire. And we'll see though. We're going to find out pretty early in the season. Look, Oklahoma State, part of my thesis too here, Colby, as we go, Oklahoma State has the 74th ranked schedule in terms of strength of schedule in the country. This is a very, very soft, manageable schedule just in general before you even get to the nuts and bolts with Oklahoma State. It'd be scary to think where the schedule would be ranked if they weren't playing Oregon week two, but that's who they've got. And look, I am not going to come out here and predict Oklahoma State to beat Oregon. But I will say, I think they're going to turn a lot of heads nationally in this game. But my main concern primarily is late in the game, third and fourth quarters, can the defense stop the run? I do think if there's one weakness on this team, it is the interior of the defensive line, which you and I broke down several weeks ago. I like some of the pieces they've added, have potential, but I do worry facing a team of the caliber of Oregon if they can get stops, the team's trying to run the football and kill the game. So I do have Oklahoma State keeping this one somewhat close. I've got it 42 Oregon, 35 Oklahoma State. So I do think it's a one-score game. I think a lot of people will come out of that game thinking, wow, Oklahoma State gave Oregon all they wanted in that game. And I think it's going to be a real springboard for the season. I really do.
That is, yeah, that's a big-time prediction. I'm looking at the live spread right now, and I'm seeing it at 18. Oregon is an 18-point favorite. I've got it right in that ballpark. I've got a 41-24 Oregon. I think we're going to be competitive. I'm really high on what Oregon is and can be as a program under Dan Lanning. I think Dan Lanning is awesome. I know we were on the wrong end of it last year, and it was painful, but I thought he was really impressive during Oklahoma State-Oregon week last year when Mike Gundy made his comments about the money and spending and all this, that, and the other. And Lanning was just like, look, we're here to win football games. We're here to win them big. And then he goes out and beats you by 10 touchdowns. He knows he's good. He knows his team's good. He was able to bring Dante Moore back. He brought in one of the – I don't know if he was one of the highest-rated quarterbacks, but he brought in a solid quarterback in Raiola to sit on the bench and be a backup, talked him into that. Shades of Lane Kiffin bringing Spencer Sanders over to be the backup at Ole Miss a couple of years ago. So I'm really high on Dan Lanning. I think Oregon has a chance to win its first national championship this year. It's crazy that they haven't won a national championship. Imagine telling somebody 10 years ago that Indiana was going to win a national title before Oregon. That was just would have been unheard of. But yeah, I've got a 41-24 competitive, but I think Oregon's going to be really, really good.
Yeah, I mean, I originally had it 42-31. That probably should be the more realistic, you know, prediction. But I have a sense that Oklahoma State's going to probably jump out early in that game, and Oregon just pulls away late and holds them off and doesn't score late to win. I think they just, you know, kill the game with the running game. That's my number one concern, is the running game.
If I may, and I just had this thought, because the other day on the Megapod, we were coming up with reasons why Oklahoma State could compete in that game, could win the turnover battle. One of the things we came up with was maybe it's going to be too hot. You know, in Eugene right now, it's like 76 degrees every day. It's beautiful. It's not going to be 76 degrees in Boone Pickens Stadium. It's going to be 145 on the turf. So you've got that going for us. Also, 11 a.m. kick, I don't hate an 11 a.m. kick for a bunch of guys whose body clocks are still going to be on 9 a.m. So watch out for first half Oklahoma State. It could be a sleepy Oregon team coming two time zones to the east and having to play Oklahoma State at 11 in the heat.
And if you really think about it, like, I do think that's a factor. Like, you shouldn't roll your eyes at the fact it's going to be 135 degrees on that turf field. You shouldn't. It's a factor. It's a factor that Oklahoma State's been out in it all summer. I think the fact that Boone Pickens Stadium is going to be breathing absolute fire is a factor, because look, Oregon has been great. And look, Colby, the reason why they haven't won a national title is they were horrendous through the 70s and 80s and most of the 90s. I mean, it wasn't until Phil Knight injected all that money in the late, you know, early 2000s that Oregon really became even a national program. But if you look at their schedule, like, they don't ever really go to that many hostile environments. They were in the Pac-12. Now they're in the Big Ten. This year they do go to Ohio State, but that's towards the end of the year. But at USC, did you see their stadium, their opening game? That was laughable. I mean, the Pac-12's never cared about football. Nebraska, Illinois, yeah, like, sure. Like, they're not going to be even close to ready for what's awaiting them this season in Stillwater. Have they played in more hostile places? Yes, they've been in the college football playoff for years and years. They've been to big-time atmospheres. I'm not saying they'd be intimidated just by Stillwater alone, but you factor in an early touchdown or turnover in that stadium, 135 degrees, that stuff matters. These are human beings playing a very human game, and I think that ultimately gives Oklahoma State a big edge. At least, you know, home field matters. It really does.
Yeah, they play in tough environments, Carson. They have not felt the weight of the paddles. The paddles feel like the weight of the world on your shoulders. Paddle people, you better be there early. They'll be there the night before. That's a campout game for sure.
Well, that's what they're taking to Tulsa's behinds, is the paddles. To hell with the cowboy belt. We're just bringing the paddles up to Tulsa. Yeah. Pledge style.
Yeah, exactly. Good call.
You know, rush week, pledge. It's going to be pledge week for Tulsa. Paddles the asses up there. Murray State, we don't really talk about. I think that's just a game that's the game where you take the Gundy approach of, let's not get out over our skis. Let's hand the ball off tackle and get out of here.
I really hope against Murray State we get to watch a lot of football players. Like, I just want to see the entirety of the roster against Murray State.
No, I agree. I think that's, you have that many new faces, that many new names, and that many mouths to feed on offense too. Like, let the third and fourth string receivers get in there and run with the ones. I think that would be a good thing. And of course, you have the Big 12 opener after that. That's why it's scheduled there. You need like a breather after Oregon. And look, I'm totally with you on starting Big 12 play on the road at West Virginia. I think you and I and people since West Virginia's come to the Big 12, we've always like, ooh, you got to go all the way to West Virginia. Ooh, it's a tough place to play. Ooh, they drink moonshine. Oh, she's never had any trouble in West Virginia. They brought some bad teams there and won. And I fully expect them to go in there and dominate this game. And really, as I get into the Big 12 schedule here, Colby, this is going to be kind of my thesis throughout. So one thing I don't think many people have talked about when it comes to Oklahoma State. Sure, we know all the numbers with the offense, right? They were number one in the nation in total offense, scoring. And they threw for 300 yards per game. They ran for nearly 200 per game. They were second in the country in yards per play at 7.2. We know all of those things. But Colby, you couple that with the trend we've seen in college football, you know, for for a long period of time, for the last, I want to say, from like 2015 to 2020, we started seeing the NFL start adopting air raid principles, more shotgun. That college influence has now matriculated to the NFL over the last 6, 7, 8 years. Well, since 2021, the total number of points have gone down in college football, total number of yards. Last season, teams averaged 27.5 points per game. That's down from, in 2020, it was 29 points per game. And it was nearly 30 in 2016. So that just shows you the scoring has gone down. The number of possessions have gone down. In 2023, they passed the rules where the clock doesn't stop after first downs. So all that's to say, having an elite offense with an elite quarterback is more important than ever because teams are not scoring like they used to. The game has changed and defenses have really adjusted to spread principles. You're seeing teams run more 12 personnel. I think Oklahoma State can come out and just flat out outscore teams and just by being mediocre on defense. So that's kind of my working thesis that the taking North Texas's number one offense in the country, plopping it right in the middle of the Big 12 with a bunch of very average offenses that are averaging below 25 points per game. That's my thesis for why you're going to hear some of my predictions moving forward.
Yeah, and that North Texas team did not have Jacob Sexton at left tackle, and the reviews on Jacob Sexton coming out of fall camp, everybody I've talked to is just raving about Jacob Sexton and how good he's looked. And look, he was a highly rated prospect. He dealt with injuries early in his career. I think he's going to be really good. Defenses have gotten much better. I still think there's an element of first real road test of the season for Oklahoma State. I don't think Tulsa's going to be a test. First real road test. I think that there could be a little slow out of the gate. I don't think it's going to be domination, but I've got a 34-24 Oklahoma State. I would be surprised if Oklahoma State lost this game. The main reason Oklahoma State has not had much trouble in Morgantown is because West Virginia has not been very good. I don't know if West Virginia's going to be good this year. I would expect them to be very average in the second go under Rich Rod. But yeah, I expect Oklahoma State to go win that game. And it'll be a massive disappointment to start conference play if they don't. And it'll make me rethink some of the things that I thought going in about what the ceiling of this team is.
I think this game is going to look very much like a North Texas game last year where they just blow the doors off them with their offense. Just, you know, second half's mostly a formality. I've got it 48-28 Oklahoma State, 20-point win on the road. Really kind of a statement coming out of the Oregon game and the Murray State game that, hey, this team's here to compete in the Big 12 now. I really expect that. And just one more bullet point. In 2023, basically last year was the lowest scoring mark across the country since 2009. So in actuality, this is very much like the 2010 Oklahoma State offense that just ignited with Brandon Whedon and Kendall Hunter and Justin Blackman. That's the baseline teams were scoring back then. And you're going to have a Whedon and Blackman Hunter type of offense. We'll just have to see if they're going to be as good as those guys. Obviously, that's a high bar. But I just think the environment this offense is walking into makes me even more bullish once I really crunch the numbers.
Yeah, I like it. pardon me, I'm dealing with like extreme allergies. So I went to Chickasha yesterday, sidebar. Went to Chickasha last night and played night golf. You ever played in any of these night golf tournaments, Carson?
Yeah. I don't even know. So I grew up, I worked at a place called Lions Fun Park in Edmond, Oklahoma. Are you aware of this place?
Nope. Not a clue.
It had go-karts, arcade, putt-putt, driving range, a great par three, nine-hole par three. And they would do glow golf on the par three with like the glow-in-the-dark golf balls and the holes and everything. So yeah, I've done a little bit, but that was literally like 30 years ago.
Yeah. So we teed off at 5:30 p.m. in the light. We played nine holes in the light. We went in for like an hour and they put glow sticks and everything else on the flags. We went back out in the dark, played nine more holes. 5:30 tee time. We finished at 12:55 a.m. I slept in Chickasha last night. I got to bed at like 2:30, which for me and my sleep schedule with a four-year-old, that's like smack in the middle of the night. My sleep schedule is jacked. Every time I go to Chickasha and play that golf course, it's just cottonwood trees all over the place. I feel like I've barely been able to breathe all day. So we did win the tournament. It made it worth it. We won the tournament. We won a little bit of cash. I made a long putt, like a 40 footer on one of the last holes. We ended up winning by one. So it was a fun night, but I'm paying for it a little bit today with my sleep schedule and my allergies.
Yeah, allergies going around my house too. We've been busting out the allergy pills. I don't get allergies that bad. I used to think they were kind of just for the weak-minded, and then I got I turned 30 and they hit me and I'm like, oh, maybe those are real. I do feel you there. UCF and Stillwater, another belts to asses game, payback time, just for all the pain and suffering UCF's caused us. Again, North Texas averaged 45 points per game last year. Colby, is it far-fetched to predict that Oklahoma State will average 45 points again this year? Is that the ceiling, or is there still room to grow there?
I think that would be the ceiling. I think you're going to have a hard time scoring a ton of points on a really good athletic Oregon defense. Same thing with Texas Tech. Some of those road games in November, you get on the road in November in Manhattan, who knows what the weather's like. I think something more in the upper 30s. I would predict Oklahoma State closer to a 36 to 39 point per game average, which would still be just incredibly, incredibly fun to watch. And off the top of my head, about 35 points than they've averaged the last 2 years.
Yep. I think it's fair. I mean, again, this offense is coming into the Big 12. They're not playing in North Texas's conference anymore. So that is a good point. But I got Oklahoma State scoring 42 again against UCF. And I've got UCF scoring, 24. I think it's a very comfortable win. OSU is not the team that they've been the last 2 years, and just really putting a stamp on that. And then I think the rubber truly meets the road here at Houston. You guys were all pretty much in lockstep here. Did all of you pick Oklahoma State to lose to Houston?
I believe we did. Yeah, I thought maybe somebody would pick the upset there, but I saved my upset for later in the schedule. I'm sure everyone's listening to the Megapod. I picked us to beat Tech in November. So I didn't have the stones to pick us to beat Tech and Houston, and I took the home game.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So October 17th at Houston. And look, I have a lot of respect for Willie Fritz. I think he's a really good coach. He's a name that I would have not minded other than his age to be the Oklahoma State coach whenever they were doing their search. Wouldn't have hated that. I think he really knows how to win football games. And I understand the respect Houston has. They returned their quarterback, most of their key players. There's a lot to like there. But I feel like they kind of hit their ceiling last year. And because their offense, Colby, was 10th in the Big 12 last year. They averaged 29 points per game, under 400 yards per game. I just think Oklahoma State, everything I've mentioned, they're and again, North Texas's scoring defense was they gave up 26.5 points per game. That's kind of what I see happening throughout this schedule. And I think they go down to Houston, much closer games than I've been predicting, but I think they have too much firepower for Houston. I really do. I got Oklahoma State winning. I got them winning 48 to 42. I think Houston, Connor Wegman, you and I famously ruled him out and he ended up playing in Stillwater. I think he'll play again if he's healthy, and I think he'll score a lot of points. But again, I don't see Houston being able to keep score with Oklahoma State, especially with possessions have gone down over that time as well. And I think it's very simple. I think people are overthinking Oklahoma State. Sure, they're going into a new conference with all the talent they brought in, but this schedule is pretty Charmin soft. There's two swing games here. I think this Houston game is a big swing game, and I think Kansas State is as well. But I've got Oklahoma State winning in Houston. Not a hostile environment either. We saw, remember the game you and I watched together up at the Greens Country Club when OSU was horrendous? Like that was a back and forth game. Like Houston does not have this stockpile of talent over the years. They really don't.
Yeah, and the stadium, it's going to be an absolute cupcake atmosphere relative to some of the other – relative to going to Manhattan, like Houston's going to be a cupcake atmosphere. I will say this. Justin Southwell on the Megapod the other night, one of his notes in his 14,000 words of notes that he had handwritten in his little book was that Houston was 5-1 last year in one-score games. That made me feel better about Oklahoma State's chances to go win that game because I know that you believe in regression to the mean. I believe – in regression to the mean. What if Houston would have went 3-3 in one score games last year? Would we feel differently about Houston if they were an 8-4 squad last year as opposed to a 10-2 squad? Or they were 10-3 with the bowl. I don't remember how many it was in the regular season, but I think we might feel a little bit differently about them. So I think that this game is very winnable. I couldn't pick Oklahoma State to win them all. So I hope you're right. I do think that this one has a chance to be an absolute track meet and both teams scoring over 40, which let's get back to the track meets, man. I'm here for it.
Yeah, I think this is really going to be a vintage Oklahoma State season where they switched to the air raid while other teams were still kind of stuck in the past. I think that's what we're going to see. And I think Nathan's stat speaks to what I just mentioned. I think Houston hit their ceiling last year. I do think they regressed to the mean. And they were not picked by anybody to be any good last year. So I think they're going to come back to what they're kind of everyone expected them to be last year.
Yeah, it was Southwell's stat. And I was just going to say on Weiberg, he was talking the other day, and the quote that I think got the most run from that interview that Chad Weiberg did was about the floor for this team being a bowl game and bowl eligibility and, like, let's get back there, but I don't want to put a ceiling on it. I think that got a lot of run. What I didn't see get as much run, he talked a good bit about the team needing to score points and that being at the core of Oklahoma State's identity. And I think that gave us an insight into his thought process as he was going out and looking for coaches to hire. He's like, look, we have been sitting in Boone Pickens Stadium for the last couple of years, bored to tears. My four-year-old daughter is literally nearly in tears because we don't bullet run. We've got to get back to our core identity, which is scoring points. I thought that quote was really telling from Weiberg. I think it gave us a look inside his head. He was looking for an offensive coach to come in and light up the scoreboard.
And I think Chad knows what he's going to see this fall. I think he knows the arsenal, the firepower, the artillery that's been, you know, transferred into Stillwater. And that's what I think they're going to absolutely just flummox teams with their offense. I mean, that the receiving core is better than they had at North Texas. It just is on top of what they did last year. So that's why I think there's a chance they could score more points this year than last. I really do. Even though they're playing, you know, Big 12 defenses. Who's next? We got Colorado. Poor Deion. Look, everyone got so fired up for Deion, and you knew at the in the moment it was a house of cards. I loved your line about the Louis bags that he brought. Now he's got what, Walmart sacks or whatever the analogy was.
I can't remember what I said, but yeah, it's
so good.
Oh yeah, he brought his Louis luggage, and it went to the NFL, and now he's got duffel bags. He bought at Ross.
Yeah, it's at Ross. I love that. I think this is another one where Oklahoma State scores half 100. I've got Oklahoma State 52. I've got Colorado 20.
You're talking about I love
they
all
shut
this
them down.
Yeah,
and look, you've heard my score predictions on the defense. I think the defense is going to be very opportunistic, and that to me is where, you know, there's a lot of ambiguity in picking these games. What you don't know yet is the turnover margins. And I think if Oklahoma State's going to have the season that I expect them to, they have to produce turnovers at the level that Skylar Cassidy wants. And that was at a extremely, you know, top 15, top 20 level everywhere he's been. And I think that'll swing a lot of games. And I think that's how you get to some of these scores defensively.
Yeah, I like it. I think that it's a good time to be Skylar Cassidy right now. Because all anyone is asking for, is hoping for, is competency. And I think the bar that he has to clear is a much lower bar to be viewed as a successful season than what Eric Morris has to clear on the offensive side of the ball. Like, all we're asking for defensively is competency. You give us competency on that side of the ball, and I think we're going to be all very happy come December. So, yeah, I think it's a good time to be Skylar Cassidy. And we're going to preview the defense here in a few minutes. And there's some names I think people are going to like.
Yeah, absolutely. They got some talent there. Now, again, the strength of the team clearly is offense. This is spooky. Halloween in Ames. No, thank you. Thank goodness Matt Campbell left and took everybody with him.
Please be 11. Please be 11. Don't be a night game.
Yeah, you do not want that game being at night. And look, I think this is where, you know, you get close to November. I think you said this very well. It's what I've been preaching. It's hard to win conference games in November, no matter where they're played and who they're played against. It just is. I loved, I think it was Nathan's line about the tall grass. I can see that grass being about two feet high when they go to Ames. And so I do think their offense takes a step back in this game. I've got Oklahoma State winning 35 to 28. I think a closer game. I do respect the coach. I think he's won at a high level, albeit at a lower level. Did bring in a lot of his own guys. It's kind of a similar type project that Eric Morris has done. So I think they're being viewed very similarly to the people that are taking the under or think Oklahoma State's going to win 5, 6, 7 games. I think they're being viewed the same. And I think they might be being undersold a little bit as Iowa State, but I think Oklahoma State should win this game. But I think it's going to be scary and spooky.
Yeah, I've got a 34-24 Oklahoma State. So I think it's going to be an uncomfortable, let's get to Ames for Halloween and let's get straight home to Stillwater and go have some fun on the strip. Yeah, don't mess around in Ames on Halloween. It's going to be uncomfortable, I think, but I think Oklahoma State will win.
Yep, I agree. And that brings us to another swing game in Manhattan, a place that's been very spooky. Speaking of frightening, the games being played in Manhattan lately have been just ugly. And back to my thesis here, Kansas State was 12th in the Big 12 offensively last year, 388 yards per game, only 29 points per game offensively. I know they brought in their favorite son, Colin Klein, great offensive mind, did really well at Texas A&M, albeit a Charmin soft schedule that A&M had. Kansas State also has a Charmin soft schedule this year. They don't play any of the big boys hardly in the Big 12. And I think they're going to come into this game with a very good record, highly ranked. And I think Oklahoma State is going to win this game. I've got them winning. I think they're going to light them up. I got 48 for OSU and I've got 35 K-State. Wow. I just think when you look at what Eric Morris has brought to his offense at quarterback versus what Colin Klein has inherited in Avery Johnson. Avery Johnson's dad was fighting some dude in Ireland on the ground this time last year. It's not gone well for Avery Johnson at quarterback. And we all know he's a runner first. And I do think Colin Klein can manipulate things and score some points no matter who he has. But he's got a much harder job to keep up with Oklahoma State than does Eric Morris to keep up with Kansas State. Now, could Avery Johnson just run the ball down Oklahoma State's throat? Yeah, that's why I gave him 35 points. But I think everyone picking Oklahoma State to lose this game to Kansas State is going too much on recency bias, too much on recent history. I just don't think Kansas State has the horses to keep up. We all like Rodney Fields. Rodney Fields would be third or fourth string running back this year. He would. There's nobody on Kansas State team difference maker wise that truly puts the fear into me. So I think it's a tough environment. I have a lot of respect for Kansas State. We are very like-minded people, us and the Wildcats, but I got Oklahoma State winning this game, somewhat handily.
I've got a 31-27 in favor of Kansas State. I'm a big believer in home field advantage in November in conference games, as evidenced by me picking Oklahoma State to beat Texas Tech the following week. I think it's just something about these environments, something about going to an uncomfortable place, playing in front of people. It's tough. So I hope you're right. I'm loving the optimism. I share the optimism and the overall sentiment about the team. I just couldn't find myself getting there on a game-by-game basis. But you've got them winning that swing game. What about the next week whenever they come back home to face the Red Raiders?
Oh, man. So I've got Oklahoma State 8-1 so far. So
yeah, you do.
Easily beating their win total from the last 2 years. Does it beat the last three? Would they win 3 years ago? Was that 23?
Okay, they won 23.
I gotcha. So look, I would really like to pick Oklahoma State to win this game, but I would sound very homerish. I will say though, it's a game they absolutely can win. I think you brought up all the same points I would bring up. You know, losing a David Bailey on a defensive line made up for a lot. Jacob Rodriguez, a linebacker, made up for a lot of deficiencies elsewhere. This is a game that Oklahoma State can win. I'm not going to pick them to win this game. I don't think they can. I think we're probably one year behind development-wise to take down Texas Tech at home. I think just that little bit of oomph from a team that's been together longer in Tech. I know they have some work to do at quarterback specifically. But I think Texas Tech wins this game. I think their defense plays really well. Probably keeps Mestemaker more so in check. But I've got Tech winning 38-35. Holding Oklahoma State under 40, you're going to win. And that's what I've got happening there. But to me, that's more respect for the program Tech has built the last 2-3 years. Again, they won every Big 12 game by 2 touchdowns last year. And while I know they have a lot to replace, I have to give them enough respect to win this game. I do.
Yeah, I think they're going to be really good again. I think Oklahoma State is going to be pretty good too. And coming into Boone Pickens Stadium, those paddles, they hit different, Carson. I don't have some sort of like just let's go beat them by 2 touchdowns or something crazy. I've got it 30-28. I think that this is going to be a coin flip game with 5-6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And you need to go score some points. I think we can go score some points. So I think that this is going to be, I think I said on Tuesday, I think it's going to be an instant classic. I think this could be a game that we remember from this season, from year one of the Eric Morris era, if Oklahoma State's able to pull it out.
Yeah, that's a good point. This is the game I struggle with the most. Sorry, I just drifted off into thought because I probably struggle with this game the most, which I did not expect when I sat down to look at the schedule. Arizona State's better than I thought.
Yeah.
They have a quarterback.
Yeah.
They have a quarterback. And Kenny Dillingham is one of the hotter young coaches in the country in terms of winning. And a lot of big programs wanted to come after him. And again, it's a road game in November at a place that I do not respect as far as hostility is concerned with the environment. Sun Devil fans have never quite packed the stadium. But not a lot of good memories going to Arizona. They remember the game against the Wildcats in Tucson with Wes Lunt. I've got Oklahoma State winning this game, but I think this is a game I'm going to want to have back. I think 9-3 is where I wanted to end up with Oklahoma State, but I've got them going 10-2. I've got them beating Arizona State. What was my score? I've got them at, again, I think they just got to outscore them. I've got them at 42-38. Or no, I'm sorry, 45-42 is what I had written down. So old school Big 12 game.
Yeah, I mean, I picked these games holistically, so I've got this scheduled in as a letdown game. Off of an emotional high over Texas Tech. I've got a 38-24 Arizona State. I think Kenny Dillingham is a good coach. And I think if it goes the way I've predicted the 2 weeks prior, where you lose to Kansas State and then you get the crazy upset over Texas Tech, to follow that up on the road the following week in Arizona State, I think could be really tough. So, I've got the big upset sandwiched in between the two road losses, but we'll see. I do think the schedule is kind to Oklahoma State in the final week of the season. I don't think too highly of what Kansas is going to accomplish this season.
No, it feels like the shine's really lit up on Leopold. I mean, having Jaden Daniels for 8 years, we'll do that, 6 years. But I've got Oklahoma State 48-31, nearly half 100 to beat the Jayhawks. So I've got them at 10-2, Colby. I think 9-3 is where I wanted to end up, but I can't pick them to lose in Tempe. I just don't think I could do that. I really wanted to pick them there, but I'm very confident in where I'm most confident that I think most people are not is the game at Houston and the game in Manhattan. That to me will determine the season. And that's where I think the turnover margins that we've seen under Skylar Cassidy's defense, if he's able to replicate that in Stillwater for Oklahoma State, then I think they're going 10-2. If they don't produce as many turnovers, giving those extra possessions, that's where I think you could fall to 9-3, maybe 8-4, or who knows, maybe even 7-5. But I think 9-3, 10-2 is where I'm very confident at. I think 8-4 would be somewhat of a disappointment, honestly. When I look at the Big 12 as a whole, we went over that list that Barry Trammell had where, and you mentioned this with Houston, that Oklahoma State and Houston are on the same tier. There's about five or six other teams that are on the exact same tier that they're going to have to win some closer games, 1-2 score games max. And I've got them winning those games. I think you lose to Oregon, you lose to Tech. That's no harm, no foul. I've got them running the rest of the way. I've got them running the table the rest of the way. I think that's somewhat optimistic. I think 9-3 is where I wanted to be, but 10-2, I'm going to stick by it because, again, I think people are trying to make this too complicated. You mentioned it, 92 new players. You're literally taking the North Texas offense, which was number one in the country, and making it better with better wide receivers top to bottom, with a running back who's put on more weight, more muscle, and is better than he already was. He's a top five running back in the country by every metric you want to look at. What's not to like here, Colby? Why am I the outlier? Why is no one else picking this team to go win 10 games and go to the Big 12 championship game? What am I missing?
I mean, it just feels like if you're picking them to lose to Oregon and Tech and run the table the rest of the way, that means you've got this team coming in from North Texas, some young guys, Drew Mestemaker, second season ever as a college quarterback. You've got them running the table on the road, and that is where you and I are differentiating. And the swing games are the Houston and Kansas State games, because I've got them 8-4 with losses at Houston and at Kansas State, because I think the road games could jump up and bite OSU this year. But if they run the table on the road, I will be just over the moon, wildly impressed with the way year one broke down. It just, did you realize that as you were going through it, that you had them as an undefeated road team? Or you still feel good with that?
I did realize that. And you know why? Do you know what the biggest crowd they're going to face is going to be?
Kansas State?
Kansas State. And besides that, I don't think they're going to see a crowd more than 35,000. I mean, let's see here. Tulsa, no. They're going to have more OSU fans there probably. West Virginia, they're not that super excited. Houston, right around 30,000 probably. Iowa State, okay, they'll show up. But in late October, are they going to be as turning out in droves as they normally are without Matt Campbell? Doubt it. Arizona State, no. 30,000 max. These are not that hostile of environments they're walking into. I mean, Houston's a pro market. I should have looked up the attendance figures before this, but K-State will be wild and very intimidating. Yes. Past that, again, West Virginia, we brought in way worse teams than one in Morgantown. It's not even that intimidating of a place to go. So that's part of it, Colby. And do you agree with any of that? Because these are not, this is not going down to Norman. This is not going down to Austin. Okay.
Yeah, I do agree. It's not some crazy juggernaut. That's why all offseason I've said that I'm bullish on Oklahoma State. And then I guess I was just a coward whenever it came time to pick the wins and losses. I just think winning on the road in conference is hard, but I don't think they're juggernauts. I don't think they're unwinnable. And I'm okay with the idea that I might be wrong on those, and I would love to be wrong on those. Because if they beat Houston and Kansas State, they're going to win a bunch of games this year. Could it still be 9-3 with the loss at Arizona State? Yeah, it could. But if they beat Houston and Kansas State like you're thinking, then, yeah, they could win a bunch of games this year. So it's impressive what they've done in the offseason. No doubt they've won the offseason. Now they've just got to go out and do it on the field. Want to point everyone toward our good friends at Echo Contracting, a proud sponsor of the pod, offering electrical contracting services throughout all of Oklahoma. They pride themselves on high-quality professional jobs done right the first time. Call or text for a quote today, 405-279-8444, or email info@echo-contracting.com. Little tease, something coming later in the week. Echo is going to be giving away some Karsten-branded Pro V1s. You're going to need to be listening on Thursday, our pod that we have later in the week. That'll give you a couple of days before the kickoff of game one to get entered in that. But we'll have all the details for you on Thursday. So stay locked and loaded. We appreciate our good friends at Echo Contracting. Going to have some fun this fall with some giveaways and some contests.
That's awesome. Pro V1s, definitely the best golf ball in the game. Those are slick. And we appreciate Echo. They're an awesome company to work with, and we appreciate them sponsoring the pod. It'll be a fun partner, fun little contest here during the football season for everyone that watches the show. And we appreciate everyone who does tune in. I did neglect to mention the hammer to my point on all the offensive numbers I've given you. So points per game allowed on defense last year. And look, I know it's a transfer portal era. These teams are not going to be the exact same. But Texas Tech was number one. They allowed 11.8 points per game. Followed by Utah, BYU, Arizona. What do all of them have in common, Colby?
Utah, BYU, and Arizona? Out west?
They're not on Oklahoma State's schedule.
Ah, okay.
Followed by Iowa State, Houston, UCF. That's the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. That's the top 6 in defense last year. Oklahoma State's playing the bottom of the standings defensively this year. That's another reason. You factor in just the overall environment of college football, offense being almost them being an outlier offensively, combined with their schedule setting up where you're playing the teams that were the worst defensively on top of that. So that edge that they have with Mestemaker and Morris calling the shots, to me, just grew somewhat exponentially based on the schedule. If they were playing Tech, Utah, BYU, I wouldn't be sitting here predicting they're going to average the same amount of points they did last year. But they're playing the worst defenses in the league. Like, sign me up. 10 wins, baby. I'm all in.
Hey, your reasoning is completely fair. Like, your logic, your rationale, everything that you're saying, like, you have a vision for how the season goes with Oklahoma State putting up a lot of points. And if they do, they're going to win a bunch of games. So we feel pretty good they can score. You ready to do a little defensive preview here?
Yeah, that's might be where my 10-win thesis goes out the window. Let's go ahead and preview the defense. A lot of names to get excited about, though.
We'll see. So we're going to do it a little bit differently this week. We're already at like 45 minutes. We don't want to go 3 hours here. So instead of getting Carson's reaction to player by player, we're going to go position groups. So we're going to rifle through. I'm going to rifle through the bios of all the linebackers that are on the projected two deep. Have you reacted to the linebackers? We'll do the same thing with corners, same thing with safety. So up first, a team captain for the first game against Tulsa, Ethan Weslowski. He was a junior at North Texas last year. So he's a redshirt senior now. Led the team with 113 tackles, played in all 14 games. Just really stout. 9 tackles for loss, 1.5 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, a fumble recovery, an interception, and 6 quarterback hurries. Had the third highest season defensive grade among FBS linebackers at 90.6, according to PFF. So that is Ethan Weslowski. Tate Romney, Carson, kind of fun. He began his career at BYU after a 2-year mission. So graduated high school in like 2018, 2019.
Any relation to Mitch? Or I'm sorry, Mitt?
I have no idea.
Call him Mitch.
I actually thought the same thing when I was doing this, and then I was like, I should look this up, and I never did. The reason I didn't look it up
I'll is look it up.
He's from Chandler, Arizona. Look it up. So he did the 2-year mission, and then he goes to BYU, then to Oklahoma State. So now he is the oldest player on Oklahoma State's roster. He got married in 2023. He and his wife have a son. He appeared in 10 games last year for Arizona State. No starts, 13 tackles. So easily the oldest player on the Oklahoma State roster, Tate Romney. Going through the linebackers here, Isaiah Chisholm. He is the UCLA transfer. So 29 career games played at UCLA, 22 career starts over 3 seasons. That's UCLA and Oregon State combined. 173 tackles in his career, 6.5 tackles for loss, 3 forced fumbles, a sack. Set a career high in tackles with 17 in UCLA's opener against Utah last year, another Big 12 foe. Ethan Weslowski also had 17 tackles in a game last year. His was against Rice. So moving on from Isaiah Chisholm to Dallas Winter Johnson. Dallas Winter Johnson was at Tulane last year, started his career at Missouri State, went to Tulane, played in the final 10 games of Tulane season last year, including the first round of the college football playoff, and he's been getting some good hype out of camp. Moving on now to Tripp White. He began his career at Ole Miss. He is going to be a I'm showing that he was a junior at Ole Miss last year, and his 247 profile still has him as a junior, but I think that he is a redshirt senior. He played in all 12 seasons last year during his first season in Stillwater. He had 1 start against Cincinnati. He had 33 tackles last year for Oklahoma State, tied for 6th on the team. So started Ole Miss, made his way to Stillwater where he played a year ago. And then Jack Puckett, he came in from UCO, a 3-year team captain at UCO, a Division II All-American at UCO last year, started in 10 games, had 63 tackles, a team-high 13 tackles for loss, 4 sacks, 2 quarterback hurries, 2 pass breakups, and 1 interception for Jack Puckett. So, Carson, some solid names, some solid transfers, ranging from North Texas to Power 4 with Romney and Chisholm coming over from Arizona State and UCLA, respectively, all the way down to UCO, our good friends up in Edmond. So what are your thoughts on the linebacking core as a whole?
Solid, not spectacular. Not related to Mitt Romney, by the way. At least not his. It's not his dad, anyway. Maybe it's his uncle. We'll have to do further investigation. But solid, not spectacular. And look, I think Ethan Weslowski, I think, is the heart and soul of this defense. I think you guys called him out a lot in the Megapod, and rightfully so. If he were to go down, I'd be really worried. He's a very, like, the PFF grades I was not aware of. That really articulates how good he was and how important of a piece he is to this year's team. But solid, you don't need them to be spectacular, really, Colby. You just need them to be solid. Make tackles in open space and get off the field. So if you're ranking the units on defense, it wouldn't be number one, but it would be up there for sure.
Yeah, I think most of these defensive unit grades are going to get grades of incomplete, just so many unknowns as far as who's going to be starting and what they've done at other places. Moving on to the corners, we'll start with Mo Horn, one of the Texas Tech transfers who came in. He'll be a senior this year. He was a junior last year at Texas Tech. Played in 7 games, started the season opener, finished the year 4 tackles, 3 solo stops, had 3 pass breakups last year. Carson, fun fact, all against Oklahoma State. The year before, interesting thing about Mo Horn, didn't get a ton of run in 25. In 24, he started all 13 games, finished 4th for Texas Tech with 56 tackles, and played 806 snaps for Texas Tech 2 years ago in 2024. So he's had really good reports out of camp. Everybody's loved what Mo Horn's done, and I think he's going to be one of the starters. LaDainian Fields, we are all familiar with. He was at Oklahoma State last year, played in all 12 games, started each of the last 6. He had 2 interceptions last year, tied for the team lead. He had the pick 6 at Arizona. That was Oklahoma State's only non-offensive touchdown of the year. Finished the year with 16 tackles and 2 tackles for loss. Colin Lewis came over from North Texas with Coach Skylar Casty. Appeared in all 13 games last year for North Texas, making 1 start, 15 tackles, 2 interceptions, 1 pass breakup, and 1 fumble recovery for Colin Lewis. And then Kobe Foreman, he's a freshman. Played 9 games last year for Oklahoma State as a true freshman. Pardon me. Last year, he was a true freshman. This year, he's a true sophomore for Oklahoma State. Played 9 games last year. He was on kickoff quite a bit. Had several kickoff returns, long of 28 yards on kickoff returns. He chose Oklahoma State out of high school over reported offers from SMU, Baylor, TCU, Arkansas, Houston, Texas Tech, Arizona State, Pittsburgh, California, and others. Carson, those are your corners, projected too deep for corners this year for Oklahoma State. And some grades have been complete. A couple of guys that we saw in Stillwater last year.
I really like this unit. I think this is a case where this is partly why I'm picking Oklahoma State to win 10 games. You know, their secondary has been by far one of the worst in the nation. I think between Horn and Fields, to me, if they have the seasons I think they can have, I think they could be 2 all-conference caliber corners. And if you're able to do that, I've heard Cassidy's been able to do some different things coverage-wise with his safeties because he has so much confidence in that corner position as a whole, not just the 2 names I mentioned. So I think that's been one of the things that I've heard the most coming out of fall camp is that they're better in the secondary than I think a lot of people think they are. And I think it starts with the corners. I think keeping Fields was among the biggest acquisitions, if you want to call it that, since he stayed put, that they had in the transfer portal in its entirety. I think that was a massive player retention getting him. And so I think this might be the best unit on the defense, but time will tell.
If it is, that's going to be music to Skylar Cassidy's ears. I really think that he is going to want to leave his corners on islands so that he can get creative in the run game and creative with blitzes on 3rd and 6, 3rd and 7, 3rd and 8. I think he wants to do a lot of things to make life hard for opposing quarterbacks. To do that, you're going to need corners who can lock up in man and who you can trust for 3 seconds. Because if you're bringing 6, 7 guys on a blitz, you've got to be able to hold up for 3 seconds on the back end, allow those guys time to get home. So if Mo Horn and LaDainian Fields can do that, if the other guys, Lewis and Foreman, can provide something there, then I'm all in. I think that could be a really good unit. Moving on to the safeties, one of the captains for Game 1, Quentin Hammonds, is a team captain for Game 1 against Tulsa. He was at North Texas last year. He had a 2 interception game against Navy that garnered him honors as the Bronco Nagurski National Defensive Player of the Week, all conferences nationwide. A great game, appeared in 12 games, 10 starts last year, tied for the team lead with 2 interceptions, 53 tackles, 5 tackles for loss, and a sack for Quentin Hammonds. And again, I must think very highly of him. He is a team captain for Game 1 against Tulsa. Moving on to Mose Phillips III. Began his career for Virginia Tech, and then he went to Missouri. That's where he was at last year as a junior. He'll be a senior this year at Oklahoma State. Appeared in 11 games last year, his 1 season at Missouri, 5 tackles, half a tackle for loss, forced fumble, and had a pass breakup. Carson, I think you're going to like this next one. Christian Bodner, he has gotten some rave reviews from Coach Eric Morris in camp. He had a rare medical condition in 2024 at Liberty, which left him hospitalized. He returned in 2025 to play all 12 games at Liberty. He was one of 3 national winners of the Comeback Player of the Year Award. Started 9 times, played in all 12 games last year for Liberty. Finished the year fourth on the team with 44 tackles. He had two sacks, two pass breakups, and a quarterback hurry. And Carson, I don't know if you read this very long sheet I sent you. Did you happen to see who his uncle is before we move on?
I may have missed that. Who is he?
His uncle is Mohamed Sanu, which as a fantasy football nerd, I know you will recognize the name Mohamed Sanu from the Cincinnati Bengals throughout most of his prime, spent time with the Atlanta Falcons, the New England Patriots. He was always a guy. Mohamed Sanu was always the guy that you were flexing in like week seven when you had an injury or somebody was on bye. It was like, you know what? I PPR league, I think Mohamed Sanu can go out and get me 12 this week. And he was just a solid player. So that's Christian Bodner's uncle, which I thought was pretty fun. And considering all of the hype in camp and the story around him with his medical condition and his uncle, I thought we'd pause and give Christian Bodner just a second here. One, a comeback player of the year award last year. Pretty cool stuff.
So was Sanu, like, what's the modern day equivalent? Wandale Robinson? Was he like the OG Wandale?
That's a good call. He was Wandale before Wandale.
No, I think Bodner's a player we're going to be talking about at the end of the year that had an all Big 12 caliber season. That's the secret is out on him. I think he's a big time player, and I think he can bring a real nasty to the secondary as well. I think that's a solid unit. Again, I think their secondary is going to be much, much, much improved between the corners and safeties. How they gel as a unit, that's something that is new to the NIL era. You know, these guys have not played at all together, all as one before, unlike we used to see in college football. So time will tell on that. But solid unit. I'd probably rank them right there with linebacker, if not a little ahead, maybe.
Real quick, I threw you a curveball. I paused in the middle because I wanted to talk about Mohamed Sanu because I'm a fantasy football sicko. But we've got a few more safeties. So this one, another really interesting profile from Markeith Williams. He comes over from Miami. He was a big-time recruit coming out of high school. Had offers from Alabama, Auburn, Florida, Florida State, Ohio State, OU, Tennessee, West Virginia, and others. Like, he was a big-time prospect coming out of high school. He goes to Miami. He plays in 11 games as a freshman. As a sophomore in Miami, he plays in 13 games. Junior at Miami, he left the team and entered the transfer portal in September. Pretty odd profile on Markeith Williams. We've got a couple more after this, but Carson, the left team and entered the portal in September edition from Eric Morris. Markeith Williams, obviously a really talented guy. No idea what happened in Miami. You just have to hope this is one of the situations where a guy needed a fresh start.
Yeah, hopefully so. Obviously, there's something that happened that has not been made public. Who knows what that could be? We could speculate all day long, but I think we're all a little gun shy after that safety from Miami came under the Mike Gundy regime and like didn't make it through a practice and see you later, never to be heard from again. But I think you mentioned the amount of games he has played. I think that's something that's been a theme throughout every position group we've done this year. And I think that's something that Eric Morris truly values is, do you have stuff on tape? Because I'm not just bringing in someone who had four stars next to their name in high school. What have you done at the college level? I don't care what level it's at. The right tackle apparently is going to be the kid that came from a, you know, 1-11 team at a FCS, but he's played a lot of football. He's produced playing football. And so while Williams left under weird circumstances, he's played a lot of football games. So I think that's the number one takeaway I've had since Morris has taken over. He puts far less into high school metrics and far more on tape.
Yeah, 24 games in two seasons for Markeith Williams at Miami. Evan Jackson, he was actually, Eric Morris talked a lot about him this week. He was asked about Evan Jackson. Said he loves the highs. The lows are a little bit too low. Wants some more consistency from Evan Jackson. He was with him at UNT last year. He's played 39 games across the past three seasons at North Texas. Skylar Casty knows him very well. He knows Skylar Casty very well. He played in all 14 games last year, one start, 44 tackles, two interceptions, two pass breakups, a sack, 1.5 tackles for loss for Evan Jackson. And then Vincent Holmes, he was a sophomore at Washington last year, so another Power 4 transfer coming in from the Big Ten, which still feels weird to say for Washington. Played in all 13 games last year for the Huskies. Started the final game of the season against Oregon, had two tackles in that one. And then this last guy for Oklahoma State, a very familiar name. He's been around for a while, Cameron Epps. is the final safety here. He had a really strong freshman season, Carson. Honorable mention all Big 12, and honorable mention for Big 12 Defensive Freshman of the Year by the league's coaches in 2023. He played in every game in 2023. The year Oklahoma State went to the Big 12 title game, he started 10 of OSU's final 11 games of that season. He had three interceptions in that season, tied for second most among all FBS freshmen. And his freshman season, he wasn't able to carry that over. He's had some injuries, played in the first seven games in 2024 before an injury at BYU sidelined him for the rest of the season. Last year, he saw action in two games against UT Martin and Tulsa out of the gate, and then he was again sidelined for the rest of the season. So I don't know where he's at physically at this point. I don't know where he's at with a new team, new coaches, but he was really good as a freshman for a team that was playing meaningful football games in a season in which they went to the Big 12 title game. I mean, he was on the field. He started the final Bedlam game. Like, this is a guy who's been around. So if the injuries haven't done too much of a toll on his body, he could be a guy that you see get real run. They've mentioned him maybe as a nickel, maybe moving him around some on the defense. But I think Cameron Epps is a name that Oklahoma State fans will be much more familiar with, who could get some decent run this year.
He's a guy that just got lost in the shuffle. You know, when you have a season-ending injury like that amidst a 1-11 season, it gets buried. You're kind of out of sight, out of mind. But that's a name we all remember. He was very, very good as a true freshman, like you mentioned. And the only thing holding him back is injuries and health. If he can stay healthy, that's another added dimension to the secondary that really we haven't been able to see for 2-3 years now. So overall, Colby, I think a lot to like. Again, I think the defensive end, I may have overspoke a little about the corners. I think defensive end still probably the strength of the team, certainly in terms of depth and playmaking ability as well. I think it's going to come down to, can those defensive ends get pressure on the quarterback? Can those corners hold up in man-to-man coverage and allow the safeties to ball hawk? If they do that, they're going to force a lot of turnovers. They're going to be cooking with gas, and they're going to give a lot of extra possessions to the offense. And I think that's how you get to 10-2. And I've seen Skylar Cassidy do this, taking what he had at Sam Houston, replicating it at North Texas. And I think he's going to replicate it at Oklahoma State. The question is how much so, and that's what we don't know yet.
Yeah, we don't. It's again, I think all we're asking for is competency. Like, if this defense is league average and the offense blows everyone's doors off, they could win 10 games. Your prediction could be right, but they've got to win the games that they put 40 up on somebody. You can't put 40 up on somebody and lose. Again, we're all here for the track meets. We've been watching some pretty boring football the last few years. Let's go score some points, even if we give up some in the process. But we're going to be right back to our old ways of being frustrated the first time they lose a game 45-42.
Yeah, probably. But I think this is very much, it's like we've gone back in time. Like 2015 Oklahoma State started that season 10-0 with a very average defense, maybe below average defense. They had Mason Rudolph. And that's all that mattered. They won a lot of close games. They got trounced the final two games of the year to Baylor and in Oklahoma. Mason Rudolph broke his foot. Am I combining those two seasons? I think that's 2015. But
I think very similar.
I mean, just, it's maybe I'll be wrong, Colby, but I think people are really overthinking this. I do. And I think when you combine the attrition that the Big 12's had at the quarterback position coming into this year, the attrition with some of the head coaches that have left, I just think this shapes up really nicely for Eric Morris to hit the ground running this year. Now, is 10 wins a little too bullish? Perhaps. But I think 9-3 or 10-2 is very much the scenario if everyone stays remotely healthy.
Yeah, I hope you're right. You know who I'm bullish on, Carson? Our good friends at Farm Service Company. Farm Service Company is a real estate brokerage spanning three generations of Oklahoma State graduates in Chickasha, Oklahoma. They offer farm management for non-resident landowners, farm and ranch appraisal, and farm and ranch sales. Check out farmservicerealestate.com for more information. Happy to have a new sponsor with us throughout football season. So, as always, support.
Can we get the Chickasha Fighting Chicks theme song whenever you read that ad?
We need the fight song. Yeah, they need to step it up a little bit on the football field this year. We hired an out of state football coach in Chickasha. His son, I think, is going to be the quarterback at UCO. He wanted to be a little bit closer, so he's coached some high-level football in Texas the past few years at the high school level, and now we've got him in Chickasha. So we're looking to be on the uptrend. It was back when I was at the franchise and I did the high school scoreboard show with Randy Heights. It was not a great era for Chickasha High School football, which was a tough scene to be the Chickasha guy on the show. But, yeah, good people down in Chickasha. It was fun to be down there last night. It was it's always nostalgic whenever I get to go back to Chickasha.
Is it the Fighting Chicks? Is that the mascot?
Maybe the Chickasha Fighting Chicks and
the logo. Fighting Chicks.
Of course, in the logo for every sport, you would love it. It's like Pistol Pete. Like, we've got the Fighting Chick swinging a golf club. We've got the Fighting Chick on the wrestling mat. We've got the Fighting Chick football logo. Like, we've got the Fighting Chick swinging the baseball bat. Like, the Fighting Chick does everything. Multi-talented Fighting Chick.
Well, that's better. I mean, I have a Memorial Bulldog here. We have, like, the most generic word art bulldog that every high school in America has. So, I probably a little jealous, even though Fighting Chicks sounds like a night on the strip back in my college days. That's neither here nor there. Probably time to wrap it up, Colby, but I really good job on the Megapod without me. Enjoyed previewing the season. Man, we're here. We've run the race. The dog days are over. The football season's here. But we still have a little bit of time.
6 days.
The season started so late this year.
Yeah.
I feel like it should be like sooner than it is, but anyway, I'm fired up, man. It's gonna be a fun season. We're gonna have 2 shows a week. Previewing the game, post game. We're gonna try and go live as much as possible for all those if we can, schedules permitting. But we are back at it, and I think Oklahoma State football is back at it. You've heard my predictions. I think we're gonna see vintage Gundy, Hartley, Barry, Blackman, Whedon, Hunter, Rudolph, Tylen, Cornball, Spencer. I've gone too far. Going too far with cornball, but vintage Oklahoma State offense is going to outscore a lot of teams this year and make Oklahoma State football fun again. That's what we all want. We can live with 8 or 9 wins. Just make it fun again, baby. We're going to watch some guys go in motion for a change, Colby. Some motion on offense and hopefully a lot more wins, but I'm excited.
Yeah, no doubt. For those who are going to be on the edge of their seat for our recording schedule after games, we'll kind of figure it out week of what our schedules are like and availability with family obligations and stuff. Also, I plan on attending every home game this year. So if you're expecting us to go live like 15 minutes after the Oregon game ends, not going to happen. We're going to be in Stillwater. We're going to have to celebrate, walk to our car, drive home in traffic. We will keep you posted. Follow us on Twitter at Colby J. Powell, at Carson_OKC. And we will keep you posted on recording schedules and go live as often as possible throughout the fall. Carson, also, one quick shout out before we get off here. Unless some crazy swing happens in the last 2 holes, Victor Hovland is going to fall just short to Scotty Scheffler at the Tour Championship. But a great week from Vic. Gave Scotty a run for his money. Scotty has just felt inevitable all week. He's barely made any bogeys, and he's been good today. Victor's lipped out like 3 putts on the back 9, and he's 2 back with 2 to play. It's just he's not going to have quite enough to get the job done, but a good week for Victor and a good close to a season where he outdueled Scotty a couple of months ago, and just good to see Victor up here after Wyndham won last week. So, yeah, just shout out Victor Hovland before we wrap.
Yeah, he's had quite a tough year. Personally, it felt like just on the range using pool noodles, was really searching most of the year. And it looks like he's in that period of time where he's found it. He typically plays really well come tour championship season. And we've seen that become a bit of a springboard for him going into the majors the following year. So hopefully he's back to, you know, being a top 5, top 10 player in the world, because that's what he's capable of. And he's kind of been a little in the wilderness, but getting that win this year really cemented his status that he's back to the upper echelon. And always just a great representative of Oklahoma State. We need another major winner besides Wyndham, who we're counting. We need Victor to get himself a major. And I think his performance this weekend bodes well for next year.
Yeah, I think so too. So great stuff, Carson. Good to have you back. I will see you later in the week in orange and black, I hope, for the
no more red.
For the preview for the Tulsa game. Appreciate everyone joining us, listening and watching us as always. Go Pokes!